The sententia itself, then, can pose as a new quaestio, as a new question, which permits me then to open a new issue. Socrates is mortal. I might then ask, what is mortality? I could argue that one out, you see? So I can argue through a proposition, arrive, and perhaps I should say there, I can argue through a proposition, which means conduct a disputatio, a disputation. I can pose a quaestio, engage in a disputatio, pose a question, and engage in a disputation, an argument, the argument's usually with myself, and then draw a sententia, a conclusion. And the conclusion can then itself be framed as a new question. Now, as I go through, the logical processes, the syllogisms, need not be as simple as the one I evidenced a moment ago, all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, Socrates is mortal. In fact, what I can do is argue through a case, and this is usually the way the scholastics did it, and arguing for a proposition, against a proposition, I can use my own arguments, I can use the arguments of other scholars, my contemporaries, or those in the past. Now, what the Lombard did was organize essentially all of Catholic theology into his four books, treating, in the first place, the Trinity. In the second place, creation and sin, the human condition. In the third place, the incarnation and the virtues. And finally, last things. This was the first systematic treatment of the theology of the Catholic faith. And it was influential as a textbook for centuries. Now, in the 13th century, we begin to see large-scale treatments of whole realms of knowledge, and these treatments are called summas. The greatest of these were prepared by Thomas Aquinas, who lived from 1225 until 1274. His Summa Contra Gentiles, the Summa Against the Gentiles, was basically his systematic presentation of, assessment of, and reflections on pagan knowledge, everything that the Gentiles knew, in other words, everything that the pagans of antiquity in particular knew. His second great summa was the Summa Theologiae. This was a presentation of the major doctrines of the Catholic Church, again arrayed systematically. Now, scholasticism, urbanization, the increasing sophistication of life in general, slowly gave rise to a new and distinctive institution, the university. Now, the medieval name for this institution was Studium Generale. That is to say, a place where all studies could be pursued. The name universitas applies more particularly to the legal status of the whole, of the totality, university, universitas, whole, totality, of the scholars who made up the university. In other words, universitas is really a legal term for the guild. In Northern and Southern Europe, certain common forces combined to create the university, but with rather different outcomes. For example, in Paris, first at Paris, then slowly in other places as well, Cologne, Oxford, Cambridge, and so on, the teaching masters in the schools banded together to form a guild, just like the guilds that organized in medieval towns and other social and economic realms, to regulate admissions to their own ranks, to set courses, to set examinations, to set fees for students, to represent themselves to the bishop's chancellor, who was normally the head of schools in a town. In other words, the Northern University springs from a guild of masters. The teachers organize themselves. In the south of Europe, law and medicine were the key subjects studied, so the students tended to be a little bit older. In these circumstances, it was the students who banded together to make certain claims on the masters in the areas of fees, in the areas of teaching, in the areas of scheduling, in the areas of examining the conferral of degrees, and so on. As a teacher, I take some satisfaction from the fact that the more distinguished of Europe's universities were those organized by the teachers. In the normal pattern, a university would have four faculties: arts, theology, law, and medicine. The arts faculty, Paris was the most famous of these, though virtually every university had an arts faculty, prepared students to teach in school, to take positions in the church, to advance to one of the higher faculties. Theology was the queen of the sciences and considered the highest faculty, the highest area of study. Paris was the greatest of the theology faculties, though Cologne and Oxford were important as well. The study of law, both civil, Roman law, and canon, ecclesiastical law, was also prominent. Bologna in Italy was the greatest of the medieval law schools. Medicine, based very much more on a close study of the ancient medical writers, Hippocrates, Galen, etc., than on experimental science or clinical practice, was taught in quite a number of centers in Europe, but those in the south were most prominent, Montpellier in the south of France and Salerno in Italy.